go out to Oregon.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Chris Langone, and I represent the plaintiff in this matter, Tonya Treadway. Ms. Treadway brought two claims under the Consumer Credit Protection Code, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Both of these acts are core components of the Consumer Credit Protection Code, and both of these acts have a notice provision that is instrumental in effectuating the underlying purpose of the statute. While the ECOA is primarily concerned with credit discrimination and the Fair Credit Reporting Act is primarily concerned with maintaining accurate information in a consumer's credit bureau, both of these acts require that when a consumer is the subject of an adverse action, that they be told why. Now, in the Senate report, when Congress passed the ECOA, they stated the reasons that this was the case. They stated that only by, you know, telling somebody why you denied them, that acts as a hedge against improper denials. And that rationale takes its root in pretty much all discrimination law, right down to the McDonnell Douglas burden shifting regime, whereby, you know, there's the obligation to articulate a legitimate non-discriminatory reason. If there are legitimate non-discriminatory reasons for taking a particular action, then that helps to show that racial animus or sex bias was not, in fact, playing a role in the decision. And of course, the same thing with respect to the Fair Credit Reporting Act. By telling people why you denied them, where you got the information from, which credit reporting agency, you enable consumers to act as a check on the credit reporting agencies and make sure that the information contained in their bureau reports is accurate. So you have these notice provisions that are instrumental in effectuating the purpose of both statutes. Gateway Chevrolet, the defendant in this case, a car dealer, ignored both notice provisions. Although Tonya Treadway was denied credit, although she was the subject of adverse action, she was never told why. Evidently, her credit wasn't good enough.
Oh, yeah. People ordinarily don't act against their own interests, and it seems to me that it's Gateway's interest to sell this car, this Treadway, and whatever it can do to help that sale take place would be in its interest. So why would it act against its interest here and not send that report or not pass that on to a credit agency if they thought there's no way this is going to be approved?
Well, had they simply, because they wanted to sell the car. In fact, they wanted to sell the car so badly that they ultimately set up what was known as a straw purchase. They induced Tonya Treadway's godmother, Pearlie Smith, under the guise of thinking she was a co-signer, to be the primary buyer of the car, and then deceived the finance company household into purchasing the contracts based on Pearlie Smith's credit. Had Gateway simply said, Tonya, your credit's poor, we can't get you financed, she would have taken her down payment and she would have gone home, and they wouldn't have sold a car at all. But instead, they wanted to trick her. In fact, they did trick her. They succeeded in tricking. They delivered Tonya Treadway a car, but had Pearlie Smith sign the paperwork. Tonya Treadway's name didn't appear anywhere on the paperwork. Ms. Treadway didn't discover this until Ms. Smith, her godmother, received the coupon book from household. Then that's when she was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Called household, and household was like, you're not on the paperwork. You didn't buy the car. Ms. Smith did. And that's when both Tonya Treadway and Pearlie Smith's lawsuits were filed. So in terms of Gateway's self-interest it's absolutely within their self-interest not to provide the notices. Because had Tonya Treadway received this valuable economic information, then they would not have been able to effectuate the scheme against Pearlie Smith. And that was another underlying purpose of this notice requirement.
Of course, in the case of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, you didn't really plead an adverse action, did you?
Yes, we did plead adverse action. We pleaded specifically in the complaint in paragraph. We pleaded it exceedingly bluntly. We pleaded. In fact, that's one of our arguments is that under federal notice pleading, the district court should not have dismissed the case. But specifically, we pleaded. I'm trying to find the exact paragraph of the complaint. In the complaint, we pleaded in paragraphs 13 and 14. I apologize. It's attached to our appendix at page 29. And in paragraph 17, we plead, Gateway took adverse action against Treadway based on information contained in a credit report. And then in paragraph 18 of the complaint, we allege Gateway never provided the disclosure required by 15 U.S.C. 1681M. Those are paragraphs 17 and 18 of the complaint attached to our appendix and our opening brief at page 29. So we did plead that there was adverse action, and they didn't give the notice of adverse action as required by 1681M. Under a notice pleading regime, that should be sufficient. Where the district court erred is the district court held that we should have pled that Gateway was a user of credit information and that Gateway relied on a credit report in making its own credit decision. And the district court said that if consistent with Rule 11, we could allege that or plead that, then we could come back and try to amend the complaint. But we could not, consistent with Rule 11, plead that because Gateway did not rely on Tonya Treadway's credit report in making its own credit decision. It relied on Gateway's credit report in denying her the opportunity to become financed by virtue of Gateway acting as an arranger. One of the key things that must be understood here is the extensive role that car dealers in our modern society now play in the financing process. It's not just a matter of we try to sell cars and if we can make a profit, that's great. Car dealers are very involved in the financing process. Car dealers actually make a back-end profit on the actual interest rate. Car dealers are told by their various financing sources in the form of rate sheets and underwriting guidelines what the finance company will buy the note for, and then they're given the opportunity to actually upsell the consumer. So they do make these back-end profits.
What is the car dealer supposed to do when a prospective purchaser is on the lot, expresses interest in buying a car, and then provides credit information of some sort that they realize is going to be insufficient? What are they supposed to do?
If they look at the credit report and say there's no hope of getting you financed, car, go home?
You have no income, no job, whatever.
That's exactly what they're supposed to say. You have no income, you have no job, we pulled your credit report from TransUnion, and based on our review of that, based on your lack of income, or based on your lack of job stability, or based on your debt-to-income ratio, or an open bankruptcy, repossession, whatever it is, we can't sell you a car, get you financed at this time. That's a very, and with the FCRA, an oral notice is actually sufficient. With the ECOA, it has to be in writing. But it's a very minimal requirement just to tell the consumer what's going on. A lot of times car dealers do just the opposite. They tell people, oh, don't worry, you know, it won't be any problem to get you financed, and they deliver. They deliver the car to the consumer in what's called a spot delivery, the idea being to get them psychologically committed to the car, to take them out of the market, to prevent them from going anywhere else. Then they might call them up 2 weeks later and say, oh, well, we couldn't get you financed, you need to bring the car back or whatnot. But that's the point, is that there's this derogation of the duty to notify the consumer. Why? All they really need to do, it's very simple, is just be upfront and say, we reviewed your credit's poor, here's why. You know, if you think something's inaccurate, take it up with TransUnion, because that's where we got our information. Because, for instance, if a credit report shows a repossession or a bankruptcy that doesn't belong to the consumer, and the consumer is denied the opportunity to purchase a car based on that, then they should know that, so they can proceed to exercise their rights under the Fair Credit Reporting Act and demand a reinvestigation and get that inaccurate information removed. A lot of times there's, and I'm sure this court is familiar with FCRA cases that have come before it, there's mixed file cases or just merged files or identity theft or inaccurate information. And if that's going to be the basis of a decision, the consumer should know it. Here, the finance manager, Mr. Hund, testified that he didn't bother to even submit her application for financing because her credit was so poor. I see I've entered my rebuttal time, so unless there are further questions from the panel at this time, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Gohn. Mr. Levin.
Good morning. May it please the court. There's a case in the Northern District that we relied upon, Najib versus William Chrysler Plymouth, that we think is helpful in getting at the issues under the FCRA and the ECOA. And the distinguishing point that's made in that case and that is applicable to this case is whether the automobile dealer actually has a financing arm of its own, whether it extends financing itself. Gateway, like most auto dealers, relies exclusively on third parties, on banks or finance companies, to extend credit to its customers. There are some dealers.
They can't extend credit. I think that Gateway can't extend credit, but why can't it refuse credit as it did here?
Because it never, as Judge Ashman said in Najib, if it does not have the ability to even offer credit because it doesn't have that function.
Well, it can go elsewhere to get the credit, but if it just looks at things and says, well, there's no hope here, isn't that a refusal of credit? I'm not sure I understand why that doesn't refuse credit just as clearly as if they referred the thing to a finance company and got the answer back from them. The result is the same as far as the purchaser of the car is concerned.
Well, the requirement under 1691 for the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, for example, is the receipt of a completed application for credit upon which a credit decision is then made by the bank or finance company. And
well, that's not the, it doesn't say bank or finance company in a statute, I don't believe.
No, it says a creditor in that case.
Creditor, but, yeah. Well, that's another definitional problem. But
the point is that a creditor, at least for purposes of a car dealer, when they are referring to a third party the customer for financing, is then going to just be applicable to another section of the ECOA, which relates to discriminatory practices. One thing that the district court below made clear is there are no allegations in this case, never were, despite several invitations to amend the complaint, of any discriminatory credit practices on the part of Gateway. There is a provision, for example, that says you can't discourage someone from making an application for credit. There's no such allegation in this complaint. There never was. And Judge Moran below cut through these issues and said the only issue here is should Gateway have supplied a notice? And what he said is with respect to the FCRA, it's clear, and Najib also makes this clear, that when Gateway simply supplies information to a third-party lender, that lender then is the one who's making the credit decision.
This thing wasn't referred. Gateway made the decision.
Correct. Because when you take a bureau, a credit bureau, for informational purposes only, you're looking at a credit score. If you know a lender is not going to give that application anything other than a denial, you would actually be taking an adverse position for that customer by sending it into that bank or finance company. It would be of no value to the customer. In fact, it would be a detriment to the customer because there then would be a declination.
Well, perhaps so, but you made the decision, didn't you? The dealer made the decision, and that's why the customer didn't get any credit. I mean, I don't see why it... And you were talking about whether it meets the definition of a creditor. That, as I understand it, the creditor is a person who, in ordinary course, regularly participates in the decision whether or not to extend credit. Well, I think the dealer participated in the decision. In this case,
the dealer is not a part of Bank One. It's not a part of the Harris Bank.
I understand that, but they are the ones that cut off the credit here. That's the point.
I can give you perhaps another example. A real estate broker knows that certain mortgage companies are going to need a certain amount down, a certain type of down payment, a certain amount of income. They're going to assist the customer in evaluating and putting together a completed application for financing upon which a credit decision would be made by a third party. An automobile dealer is no different than that. They do try and assist the customer in that way, and if they see they can't assist the customer, there's no requirement under these statutes that that notification be sent out. The notification requirements under these statutes and the definition of an adverse action would literally mean a credit decision. If we don't offer credit ourselves, we can't revoke it or reject it. The Northern District...
Well, you participate in a process by deciding whether to refer the thing to a financial institution or not.
We do evaluate.
The result is the same as far as the customer is concerned. Whether you referred it and the bank said no, or you said no before you referred it to the bank, I don't see why there's any difference in process there.
Well, I think the difference is, as it was said below by several of the judges in this district, that it is central to the disclosure requirement, the notice requirement, that there be a submission of that application to the party that actually is going to make a decision to accept or reject the credit. There was never any formal application sent in. There was never any rejection or acceptance of credit. And Gateway, without dispute, and it was never challenged below by the plaintiff, offers financing on its own through its own financing arm to its customers.
You do a credit report on them, though, right?
We pull a credit bureau or credit report. A customer can actually go on the internet and walk in with his own credit bureau. That information is now available rather easily. But if you see that report, you then have to go through the process of taking that information, deciding what a down payment would be appropriate to meet within a third-party lender's guidelines. And that is the process of the completed application.
That goes to what Judge Cuddy was talking about, because you're in the process now by looking at the credit report and making an analysis on behalf of whatever financial institution involved.
Well, we're not necessarily making an analysis for that financial institution. We certainly are evaluating a score. There is a credit score
to send it forward.
To send it forward. But, again, with the inability to extend the credit ourselves, we aren't making that decision. I think it's important to note that the way that that both of these statutes are set up is to prevent these discriminatory practices, and there is no allegation to that extent in the complaint. The FCRA claim, which was
this case was decided summary judgment, right?
It was decided in part summary judgment on the ECOA claim. It was decided on a 12b6 motion to dismiss with respect
and
to
your
the FCRA.
Opponent indicates that, and we've held that this is a notice pleading situation, and you can take almost any set of facts that you can imagine to support the complaint.
And if you look at the complaint and what Judge Moran did when he reviewed the complaint and issued his memorandum opinion and order, is refer to paragraphs 10, 11, and 12 of the complaint, in which the plaintiff pleaded that Gateway regularly arranges for the extension of credit, selects creditors, third-party banks or finance companies and attempts to arrange financing. There was no allegation, and the district court invited that allegation, subject to Rule 11, that Gateway itself was the one who was extending credit here. Two times an order was entered, giving leave to file an amended complaint. On neither occasion was an amended complaint filed. I don't have anything further. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Legon? You have 4 minutes.
Counsel is right about one thing. On neither occasion the complaint was amended because we could not put the amendment in that the district court erroneously wanted, namely that Gateway itself, we must show or allege that Gateway itself extends credit and accepts payments over time. I mean, we couldn't amend the complaint to plead that because that's not true. We didn't think we would ever be able to prove it. We had no evidence of it at any time. That's not the requirement, though, to subject Gateway to the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. As Judge Cudahy noted and the panel has commented, that the statute plainly defines as a creditor anyone that participates in the decision. And certainly when Gateway takes a credit report and evaluates it, as counsel indicated, for informational purposes, I mean, first of all, you can't just take a credit report for informational purposes. You need a permissible purpose under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And specifically, the only permissible purpose a car dealer would have in taking a credit report is in arranging credit, because the car dealer makes very important decisions about which finance company they're going to submit the application to, whether they're going to submit it to a prime finance company like GMAC or to a subprime finance company like Household or Triad or many of the other subprime lenders, and also what rate they're going to ask for in terms of setting the credit. And they actually engage in a process, and this was all in the summary judgment record, of rehashing, where the finance company will say, well, if you get more down payment, maybe we can finance it, but we can't finance it without more down payment. And then the dealer might say, well, what if we up the interest rate 2 points, then will you take it as is without more down? And then the finance company might say, well, maybe if you get a co-signer. And it's that rehashing process that's a clear participation in the process. Indeed, the dealership usually receives multiple facts from multiple finance companies, and so, you know, from they'll submit it to Household and Triad and GMAC and see who says they might buy the paper, and then the dealership makes a decision as to who they're going to sell the paper to and at what rate. So they're very instrumentally involved. Let's not forget, Tonya Treadway was sent a solicitation by Gateway that told her she was pre-approved. Gateway bought her name off of a list of people that recently obtained Chapter 7 discharges in bankruptcy and sent her a solicitation saying, come on down, you're pre-approved to buy a car.
I thought she went to Gateway because she saw a television ad.
They told her to call 1-800-BUY-A-CAR, which is the number that Gateway uses in its television ads to screen people. And what happens is, and the solicitation told her the same thing, you're pre-approved, call 1-800-BUY-A-CAR. She called. She gave them their information, and they said, yep, you're approved for a car. Go to Gateway. And those are the same ads that Gateway runs with its celebrity endorser saying that they will get anybody financed in 5 minutes. And that's a key point because, you know, Gateway is not a mere referrer or forwarder of applications. You know, Gateway markets itself as being able to get anybody financed in 5 minutes. And it sends people pre-approvals telling them that they had been approved. We think the district court's decision on both counts should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And we